This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
What's up? It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. George Sedano in for Max today. Feel free to jump on board. Hang out with us at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. And all our guests, including Ramona Shelburne, who will join us in less than 10 minutes, joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. Hey, did we make a mistake by not voting Chris Paul MVP? I'm asking that question simply because, and it's not to disparage Nikola Jokic, who was incredible this season, and honestly was incredible in the playoffs thing, as well, too, this season, too. But, man, I get the MVP has turned into the Best Player of the Year award. But I think that the value part of the equation doesn't get discussed enough. Now, look, many moons ago, I was on the side of, oh, I can't believe Steve Nash won an MVP over Shaq. Couldn't believe it. But if you go back, and it's not to say that Shaq wasn't deserving in 2004 and 5, but when you go back and watch Steve Nash and you look at the impact that he had on the floor, in the locker room, an extension of the coach, it's exactly what Chris Paul was this season. Chris Paul has sort of reinvented himself a little bit over the last couple of years, starting with his tenure in OKC. Because Chris Paul used to get a lot of criticism. And he's getting a lot of love now. And I think it's deserving. I've always given him his love and his flowers. But that certainly wasn't always the case. For years, all we heard about how Chris is tough to play with, he's too hard on his teammates. And, you know, I was joking earlier that we always, not we as in me, but like people generally are of the thought of, these millennials, these Gen Zers, they're not coachable. They can't take criticism. They're not tough enough. Well, Chris Paul is sure as hell tough as you know what. He is not easy on people. I don't think that's changed all that much. But his stints in OKC and now in Phoenix have been fruitful to say the least. He is one game away from the NBA Finals. And I think they get it done tonight. But the kids that he's playing with, whether it was OKC or now certainly in Phoenix with Ayton and Mikal Bridges and Devin Booker, who I'll get to in a second, they appreciate him and love him in a way that perhaps his other teammates couldn't because of ego. Ego gets in the way. Because, you know, your peers, in theory, when you're Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, or DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul, or James Harden and Chris Paul. But when you're these young guys, this is the dude you had on the poster on your wall. So he's now your teammate, and as I mentioned with doing the Steve Nash comparison, an extension of the coach. So I look back at the MVP race, and I didn't have a vote. Okay, I don't. I believe our sideline vote goes to Israel Gutierrez, my pal, Izzy. But I believe that my other pal, Rachel Nichols, from The Jump, which you can catch each and every weekday at 3 in the afternoon and noon Eastern, and of course, replayed on and on demand on the ESPN app, she's always made this claim. We should have an MVP and a Player of the Year. Because in this case, the MVP would have been Chris Paul. The Player of the Year would have been Nikola Jokic. Because as much as I love the analytics aspect of the way sports has trended, I know not everybody does. I do love it. But I think sometimes we need to leave some nuance for discussion for stuff that can't always be measured by purely statistics. And I think the Chris Paul candidacy, or in this case, lack thereof, because he didn't finish in the top three. I don't even know if he might have finished in the top five, if I recall correctly. But nonetheless, he wasn't a finalist. I think points to that we maybe need a little more nuance in these discussions. But He is one win away, man, and I'm excited for him. I feel like we have hit that time where there's no question he is the best player to never play in an NBA Finals. He is a top five or six at worst point guard in NBA history and just doesn't have that on his resume. And I believe that that will be removed from the resume. He will now, I believe he's going to be in the NBA Finals. And this franchise, from James Jones in the front office to Monty Williams, the coach, have allowed Chris to be Chris. Chris is best when he's in control and you follow his lead. Success will happen at that point. PJ Carlissimo was on with KJZ this morning and said pretty much the same thing.
You can see him getting on his teammates. You can see him making plays. Sometimes it's an assist. Sometimes he just comes up with a loose ball. And he's got that John Stockton. Remember Stock would go, he'd go 10, 12 minutes without taking a shot. And all of a sudden you'd get a five-point lead and you say, oh, we're getting away right now. He'd just come dribbling down and knock a three down. Wouldn't even touch the rim. Chris kind of does what he needs to do. I agree with you. I think each day back, his shot is getting better and better. And I think, you know, should they advance, he's going to start knocking down shots the way we're used to seeing him do it. But his floor game alone is worth it for Monty and for those young players on the floor with him.
Yeah, it's all coming together. When we kind of all wrote him off. Remember how we talked about how bad his contract was just a couple of years ago? That's certainly not the case now. This dude's going to sign another three-year extension for like 100 mil because he's balling right now. And he's also found, finally, late in his life, and this happens to people. There are plenty of people from a relationship standpoint that find their match later in life. Look, I didn't get married until I was in my 30s. I mean, I enjoyed my 20s. There's that part of the equation. But nonetheless, I did and, you know, meet my match later in life. I'm 43 right now. It wasn't until I was in my 30s that I met my wife. And in Chris's case, in his marriage with Devin Booker, he has found the right match. He said it yesterday. We've got a young team with some old souls, especially Book. He's like an old man. He's the oldest 24-year-old I've ever met in my life. The biggest thing, he knows the game. And he watches every game, every night, just like me. And that's what you need in life, man. Beyond money, power, and respect, as we all know, as one prophet once said many moons ago. But what you need in life is someone that gets you for being you. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be collaboration. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be compromise. But at the core, we know what our personality quirks are. And it's working because these two dudes are on the same wavelength. Ego's not in the way. And again, Devin Booker looks up to Chris Paul like, yo, I was watching you play when I was a kid. And now I get to play with you. So that helps. And now they could collaborate and perhaps bring the first championship to Phoenix. Now, speaking of collaboration, a lot of guys get knocked for it, particularly from the wing positions. Giannis in particular. Now, Giannis has been in rarefied air this postseason. When you look at the type of numbers Giannis is putting up, 10-plus games with 30 and 10. All right? The only other four players to do that since 1963, 10-plus games in a postseason run of 30 and 10, are Shaq, Hakeem, and Kareem. And, of course, Giannis. But all we do is talk about how, oh, Giannis can't shoot. Well, you know what? He's not shooting right now. He's going in the paint and taking care of business. And he's the guy, much like, let's say, and I'm not comparing him as players, like Shaq and Kobe back in the day, Shaq would bring you three-quarters of the way, and then Kobe would finish it for you. And perhaps that's the relationship and the collaboration that Giannis and Middleton have. Giannis said it yesterday. We don't have to play the sound, but he said it in the postgame. Chris was balling. He was rolling. Chris, bring us home. And there's nothing wrong with that. Their dynamic is working. We don't need to criticize it, especially on the precipice of potentially going to the finals and maybe winning a championship. But it is funny, man, how we love to yap about dudes because they don't do it the way we want them to do it. It's just crazy to me. Let people be them. Don't put them in a box. You know who never gets put in a box or in a corner? Baby from Dirty Dancing. And also, Ramona Shelburne. ESPN NBA insider and friend of the program, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline here. So, Momo, real quick, before I get to some stuff, because I know you got some juicy nuggets for us here today. But this stuff with Giannis and Chris Middleton, can't we just let those dudes be those dudes? Like, why do we try to make everyone Kobe or Michael or LeBron or whoever? Why don't we just appreciate people for their individual talents?
Did you just not compare Chris Middleton to Kobe, though?
No. I said that they're dynamic. They're dynamic.
They're dynamic? Okay.
Not as individual talents. Yeah.
You know what the problem is? Is it's just like, it's kind of like when we were talking about Jokic as the MVP. Like, people just can't get their head around certain things, right? So you just, it's just hard for certain people to see Nikola Jokic as an MVP. Just hard for certain people to see Chris Middleton is an NBA Finals player, right? Or is Chris Middleton is a star in this league? Like, it's just, there's nothing wrong with Chris Middleton. Like, he just hasn't been seen as that guy the whole time. Same thing with Jokic. Like, we just don't see Jokic as the best player in the game. Like, when we have that conversation, who's the best player in the game? How many times does Jokic's name enter into it? Now them, right? I mean, it's KD, it's LeBron, it's LeBron. Kawhi. Like, we just don't put them in that category. And so then when they're put in these positions in the playoffs, when everything really matters and everything's out there, it's just kind of hard for us to wrap our head around. It's kind of like somebody who's a really good TV star, and then you cast them as a lead in a movie. It takes a minute, right, to change your view of somebody. So I think that's what's going on, quite frankly, with all of the teams that are still left in the playoffs, because we don't have the Lakers, we don't have the Warriors, we don't have the Nets. Like, we don't have the people who have been in the finals for the past 10 years in these semifinals right now.
And I love it. I think it's good. I think it's great for the game. I think it new blood is good. Yeah, I think all of that is great. Now, you brought up the MVP race. I was actually just talking about it because our pal Rachel Nichols has always said, well, there should be a player of the year and an MVP. And to your point, Jokic was the best player this year, but I would make the case that Chris Paul was the most valuable player this year.
I almost voted Chris Paul. I was really close to it. I Dave McMenamin and I had been talking about it for the last month of the season. I go, I really might vote for Chris Paul. I really might do it. I really, you know, like, I wanted to get the courage to do it. And I think it hurt a little the last couple weeks. They lost some games and they didn't win the West. I think that would have really cemented a little more of a late push for Chris Paul. And then I think also Steph Curry had an amazing last 2 months of the year, where the Warriors went from, you know, just a terrible team that was going to miss the playoffs altogether. I mean, they ended up doing that, but they got into that 8th seed for the play-in tournament. But like, Steph Curry's last couple of months was just, I mean, even I would say last 3 months were just amazing. And I think he kind of outflanked him for that like late push. Does that make sense, George? Like, if there was going to be a late push for Chris Paul, I think all the momentum of like the late breaking votes, if you want to use a political term, okay, I think that probably went to Steph because of the way he finished, the Warriors finished. I mean, Steph had, he beat the Suns, he beat the Jazz, he beat the Nuggets, like, and he beat Memphis on that last day of the season. Like, just a lot of stuff was like fresh in people's mind. And then statistically, when you looked at it, like, Steph versus Chris Paul, this really was no comparison, right? Like, statistically, it was not even close. And so if you weren't going to vote for Jokic, or if you were a late-breaking vote, I think that's what hurt Chris Paul. But I do think just the most valuable, I feel good about saying that, but damn, Devin Booker's been good, George.
Yeah.
Like, they won those first two games, and Devin Booker was that guy. So it kind of undercuts a little of the Chris Paul most value argument.
Right, but those guys hadn't made the playoffs in a decade is kind of my thing. And then Chris gets here.
Yeah, you're right.
And Devin has become, like, you know, to use a Star Wars reference, like Chris's Padawan, right? He's teaching him the Jedi ways. You know what I'm saying? And his apprentice of sorts. And I think that that's helped. And, you know, Chris talked about it. I read the quote where he's like, he's an old soul. He's the oldest 24-year-old I know. He watches every game every night just like me. Like, Chris finally has someone who is like him. So I actually think that the marriage, because of that, works. But I think that Chris helped bring that out of him and bring it to the surface. Same with Ayton.
You know what's been fun watching? So I was in the room for that press conference. The first time, George, I've been in a press conference room, and a year and a half. Okay,
wow.
Like, it was amazing. Yeah, first time we're like actually in the same room as people. It's amazing. We all have to go through a bunch of COVID testing and vaccinations to do that, but that's all great. I'm happy.
Yep.
And that press conference, I'm a scene set for you, okay? So Chris Paul's giving that press conference, and he was there for a good, like, 10 minutes. It was not like he wasn't rushed out of there. They let him answer a lot of questions. And Devin Booker walks in the room at basically the same time Chris Paul starts. So he basically has to sit through that entire press conference waiting. You know, normally guys will it was in one of those chairman's club. It wasn't the chairman's club, but it was like one of those club rooms back there at Staples Center. Mm-hmm. And normally guys will just kind of wait behind because they don't want to be in the same room as the media asking all the questions, right? But like Devin Booker had got some poke and sushi. So he like walked in there and there was like some tables in there. So he just wanted to eat his sushi. So he's like sitting in the back at the table eating some sushi while Chris Paul's talking about him the whole time. Right?
That's kind
of fun,
funny.
Right?
So
he's just like listening to Chris Paul talk about him. And that's it. I mean, it'd be like you listening to me talk about you on the radio show. It's kind of weird, right? Like,
it is.
Here's what people say about you. And it was kind of, I liked it because most players, like, they're kind of impatient. They want to get out of there. They're like, I don't want to sit and wait for Chris. Can we just do this together? But I don't think they can do anything together because of the rules this year. So it was like he just very patiently sat there eating his dinner and listening to Chris the whole time. It gave me like a vibe for Devin where in the sense of like he really is kind of – he's cool. He's just chill. He's not – you might have an image of him, but he really is that kid who goes and tries to talk to veterans. He's that kid who just wants to learn and listen. Like I, even right then when Chris was talking, I guarantee you Devin was listening and he was learning something from it. Like that's his vibe. He is not in a hurry to get places. He's not in a hurry to do things in his life. He's just kind of there studying, listening, learning, waiting for his moment. And I think this really is. Like the Clippers, let's be real, the Clippers have outplayed them in three of these games, but they only have one win.
Yeah, okay? None. And that's the way it works sometimes.
That's the way it works. And I'm looking at tonight and I just, man, George, how tired did the Clippers look to you?
Like
just,
they look exhausted.
Totally
they've played
gassed.
17 games in 35 nights or whatever it is. They look gassed. Yeah,
yeah.
There's no doubt. Now,
yeah.
let me – I only got 2 minutes
like tonight.
I agree. I think both series are over, to be honest with you. I got 2 minutes here. I got two quick questions for you. Now, so remember, we got 2 minutes. So Dame Lillard, Chris Haynes reports in Yahoo that Dame may be looking outward to get out of there potentially. He may be looking outwardly. What do we know about that situation? And I know you have something else on the Lakers and Dodgers before you go, but what do we have on Dame?
Yeah. Well, you know, Dame to me is he got caught in a very, I think you look at that team and say, it's going to take a lot for them to reconstitute that team and make them win. Right. And put them in a position to contend in the West with what the Lakers have done, the Clippers, the Suns, the Jazz, like that's a long, this big hill to climb. So there's a combination of frustration about their overall place in the Western Conference and his ability to win. And also, he got caught in this crossfire. Like, you ever wade into somebody else's mentions, George?
Yes.
Where, like, you get
yes.
caught up in – have you ever gotten my mentions? Like,
I have, fun, right? Actually. Yes.
Right? And you're like, oh, is this how you live, Momo? Okay. I think that's
catching
what happened with
Dave yeah.
over the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And Dame waded into the Chauncey mentions, and it's like, whoa, hey, I don't know if I want to be in here. What happened? And I get why he's upset about it. Like, this is not his situation to answer for. This is Chauncey Billups' situation to answer for, and we're going to hear from him tomorrow when he's introduced as the head coach. So I don't put as much, like, I don't think anything's imminent there in Portland. I don't think he's going anywhere right now. But I think if you're Portland, like, you have to look at the hill you have to climb. How much money is owed to Dame over the rest of his career? His value is pretty darn high around the league. Like, there might be some interesting offers. So I don't think you look for it, but there's definitely teams that are going to call him. Let's see what kind
no
of
question.
Offers they get.
Yeah. Yeah. You might as well. Right. Open for business. See what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Last one for you. Cause we got about a minute.
Sure.
You have the Lakers. There is I guess a minority owner who is selling his portion of his stakes of the Lakers. Now, there is an evolution to the story. You have some details about it being a Dodger owner as well getting involved with the Lakers.
Yeah, so it was interesting the way this came about. Phil Anschutz, who owns 27% of the Lakers. Okay, that's a significant stake. He also owns AEG, which is this big thing. He's always been kind of a silent partner in the Lakers because the Buss family controls 66%. He's selling his shares to Todd Boehly and Mark Walter, who are the chair and the owners of the Dodgers. Now, not all of the owners, because Peter Guber is one of them, and he also owns the Warriors, so it's just a few of the Dodger owners. But, George, we are going to have somewhat of a business partnership between the Lakers and the Dodgers here in L.A. It's super interesting in terms of fan data, in terms of ticket sales, sponsorship shows, the way that they can collaborate here in Los Angeles. I mean, I think you see that in Chicago with the White Sox, right? Jerry Randstaff owns both the Bulls and the White Sox, but we haven't really seen this kind of collaboration between the Lakers and the Dodgers. Now, it doesn't change anything day-to-day ownership-wise for the Lakers. The Buss family's still in control. They're not selling they're not selling at all, so they have majority shareholders, but they have two new partners, and they happen to be the owners of the Dodgers.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. Ramona Shelburne. ESPN. NBA insider with us here on the Max Kellerman Show. George Sedano in for Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Momo, you're the best. Great catching up with you. Talk to you soon.
All right, don't go into my mentions. It's not a fun place.
I'm not. I'm not catching strays. I'm not. I'm out of there. See you, Momo. There she is, Ramona Shelburne. All right, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. All right, coming up next, we play No Doubt. Am I watching the best baseball player I've ever seen? No Doubt, coming up in just a moment.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. George Sedano in for Max. If you want to hop aboard, you can on the phones at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Raj is here as well. It was good to hear Christine Lisi's voice. It's good to hear Bubba's voice in the background as well. Christine Lisi, when I worked in Bristol, man, I've never put on more weight. She is a master baker. I'm sure people in the audience know this already. Good Lord, Raj, you have no idea the type of deliciousness that she would bake for the entire staff, particularly on the weekends.
And I know you don't turn down a plate of flu when someone comes into your studio with it. You are not going to turn it down.
Hell no. Though you make me sound like I'm a fat person. I'm not.
There's some stuff out there right now from Christine. I don't even know. It's like.
What is it, Bubba? Tell me so I can think. I just dream of it.
It's a cookie with something. I don't even know. I don't know. Maybe Christine. Let's ask Christine. Christine, can you tell us what it is?
Put her on. I want to hear this.
It's a brownie inside a cake mix cookie.
with melted chocolate on top. Come on, Christine. What are you doing to people over there? That sounds delicious.
I miss you, George, though. I miss you.
I miss you. I miss you, too. Maybe I'll come by and see you guys this fall at some point and say hello. But, God, the deliciousness continues. She is like if there's like a Nobel Prize for baking, Christine Lisi deserves it. But anyway. All right. Speaking of prizes, I'm going to win something today. We're going to play No Doubt. I feel like, I don't know if there's a winner or loser, but nonetheless, I'm going to play anyway. All right, No Doubt is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life.
I'm going to get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No Doubt.
All right, Gene. I looked this up after you mentioned it to me, but I saw the performance in, you know, the BET Awards were yesterday. Method Man stole the show.
Man, Raj, no doubt did he steal the show.
No doubt.
Woo! First of all, let me say something. For all of us that are, you know, on the other side of 40 now, okay? Now, you were making me out to be like, you know, a man that wears, you know, larger pant size. The pandemic has done this for me. I have actually been in the best shape I've been in since college, okay? I'm down to like 175 right now. I'm looking lean. But look, I ain't looking like Method Man, though. That dude is swole, okay, right now. Fit, strong, and as you mentioned, stole the show yesterday. I thought that his entire appearance was just fantastic. It was both comedic, both entertaining, and just impressive to see a dude on the other side of 40 still killing it. Great job, Method Man.
That's right. And talking about straight killing it, yo, Ohtani is the best player in the league.
No doubt.
Ooh.
Okay.
No doubt.
So, not only is he the best player in the league, Raj, and you've known me for a long time. How long have we known each other? Almost 20 years, right?
Man, almost two decades.
Yeah. So, I am not someone who just goes all hyperbolic for no reason, okay?
No, I
try to be measured in my approach. I try to give perspective and context. But Shohei Ohtani is the single greatest baseball player I have ever laid my eyes on, okay?
What? Yeah.
I'm telling you, dude, he's got 25 jacks, okay? Mm-hmm, and the last time anyone hit 25 jacks, the most strikeouts they had as a pitcher when they were still doing playing both ways was Babe Ruth with 30. Ohtani's got 80, okay? And
Brother
we are
Babe
halfway. Halfway through the season. So Shohei Ohtani, he's humongous. He's fit. He looks like Method Man out there, except bigger and stronger than and younger than Method Man. So Shohei Ohtani, the best baseball player I have ever laid my eyes on, and I'm sorry to Don Mattingly pre-1985 or Alex Rodriguez or Barry Bonds or whoever I would be omitting. Shohei Ohtani is the man.
All right. Got it. I like it. I like it. I love watching him as well. Hey, you know what? They're already up to 9. But, George, you're excited for Fast and Furious number 9.
Not feeling it. Listen, I don't even care about the first 8, to be honest with you. Now, I watched the one with Paul Walker. May he rest in peace. I loved Paul Walker as an actor. And I've seen a few here and there, but I've never even seen them in order. One of them, yeah. Which one is Tokyo Drift? Is that 5? I don't know. I've seen a bunch of them. I mean, they're good popcorn movies. You know, Raj, I'm a snob at the movie theater. I like to go watch films, not movies.
Oh, I see. You've been hanging around Bin Lions too long. I see.
I am a film person, not a moviegoer per se. So although I did watch Tenet the other day from Christopher Nolan with John David Washington. Good Lord. I need to watch that a second time because it was confusing.
I'm
but nonetheless.
I'm so confused.
So confusing, okay? Yeah. But nonetheless, Fast and Furious, if you love it, good for you. Not my cup of tea necessarily. All right.
Okay, we got two. What did we get? 2 no doubts, 1 awesome. Not bad, George. Take them out.
All right, there you go. All right, coming up next, you'll never believe the sport I found myself interested in and a team to root for. We'll get to that in a second.
Hold on. I forgot the number. Hold on.
Technical difficulties. Sorry, Bubba. I paused. You guys told me to pause, so I paused.
I was trying to help Jackson back here. We have some issues back here with something else. I left the board. I come back, and I'm like, oh, whoops, don't have the number. Hold,
it's
please.
Okay.
Oh, it's okay.
That's fun.
No, you want to ask me about Aaron Rodgers? Might as well since we're waiting.
Will he be in camp when training camp starts for the Green Bay Packers?
No doubt. Absolutely. Listen, I ain't mad at Aaron, though.
No
okay?
doubt.
I would want to take this vacation in Hawaii, too. I would want to be chilling. I feel like they have dissed him. I went on a whole diatribe the last time I filled in for Max a few months ago about how I feel that whole situation, they have not appreciated him properly. But I still think he ain't going to get traded, so at least not this year. So he's going to have to report eventually. All right. So that is no doubt. So coming up next, you'll never believe the sport I have found myself interested in and a team that I have found to root for.
Rios delivers. Swing and a miss. It's over. The Red Sox have swept the New York Yankees for the second time in the month of June. They swept in New York early in the month. They sweep here.
All right, that was WEEI 93.7 FM as the Red Sox swept the Yankees at Fenway Park. This MLB weekend recap is brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show continues here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. George Sedano in for Max. I'll be back in tomorrow. Max, I believe, is in Wednesday and Thursday, and then I'll be back on Friday. Right, Raj? That's how it's going to go?
That's good. That's my math.
All right, sweet. The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN Plus. Stream new episodes every Tuesday, only on ESPN Plus. You can also stream this show, The Max Kellerman Show, along with hours of daily sports talk from ESPN Radio. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/UFC. So during No Doubt, one of our last questions, we had to...
No Doubt.
Yes. To Raj's credit, we did have it as a question. We were shortening the game because I was long-winded on my answers. But we were able to sneak it in anyway because of the technical snafu. But the Aaron Rodgers situation to me is fascinating. I really feel like Green Bay really blew this, man, in a big, big way. Because you are never getting more for Aaron Rodgers at this stage of his career than this offseason. When, hell, on draft night for that matter, when he had been telling you that he wanted out and you chose to not aid him in that process and then all this stuff transpired, right? Adam Schefter's reporting and whatnot. Man, you put yourself in this position because he's coming off an MVP. He's only getting older. I'm not saying he's not going to be great next year, but is he going to be the MVP again? Chances are he's probably not. So, God, I don't understand how they did not take advantage of this opportunity and just say, you know what? Let's go. Trade us whatever you want. 2-3 first rounders. We'll give you Aaron Rodgers. But you know what it does tell me? It tells me they made a huge mistake, I think, on Jordan Love. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm an idiot. Wouldn't be the first time, that's for sure. Raj knows that as well as anyone. But if Jordan Love were ready, they'd be okay with Aaron Rodgers wanting out. The fact that they're not means he ain't ready. And look, I know Aaron sat 3 years. I get all that. But you know, the reason they pushed Brett Favre out the door basically was because they knew Aaron was that good. They're not doing that in this case. So you got to make sure you understand the game at hand here. So they could talk about how, quote-unquote, difficult a fella he is when their president is talking about Aaron, but they have mishandled this situation. Even before the stuff with the roster or whatever and, you know, whatnot, and that Green Bay is not some sort of free agent destination. You need to be aggressive in the window you have because your window for winning when your quarterback is that age shrinks every single season and is only going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Speaking of windows getting smaller, the elite pitching in Major League Baseball, has that window closed? Because since June 3rd, when they changed the rules in Major League Baseball midstream, and again, I'm not necessarily blaming the pitchers entirely on this, although they are partially to blame, as I mentioned earlier. I think Major League Baseball is using pitchers as a sacrificial lamb because they were letting these pitchers, they were letting them mess around with their grips. And then all of a sudden they didn't like what they were seeing and like, oh, no, forget it. Now we're changing the rules midstream. That's not cool either. So the pitchers are taking the brunt of this. And now if you're these teams, you're wondering to yourself, what do I have? Right? How good is Trevor Bauer? How good is Garrett Cole? Are they as good as advertised? Again, a very sticky situation that Major League Baseball has put everyone in. Here's Trevor Bauer of the Dodgers on the situation.
I think you have a couple people on the competition committee at MLB that decided that they could get some offense back in the game if they got rid of some of the foreign substance usage. They assumed spin rates would drop and offense would go back up. You know, there's obviously the three true outcomes kind of dominating baseball right now, walks, home runs, or strikeouts. So I think that's kind of where they started, and then pitchers were just being, like, so blatantly obvious about it. I mean, you get guys sitting there on the mound, like, grabbing their glove and, like, looking at their fingers and stuff like that. So not really a good look, but, you know, I don't think it's something that should have been done, you know, mid-season like it was.
Agreed. And he's right. Okay. You give someone a finger, they take your whole hand or your whole arm in this particular case. But look at the numbers for a guy like Trevor Bauer. In April, his ERA was 2.48. In May, 1.98. Now 3.55 in June. Look at Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole, 1.43 ERA in April. 2.18 in May. 4.65 in June. If I'm these teams, I'm like, I'm not happy with Major League Baseball either. What I am happy about, though, is I have found a new love for hockey. And I got a team to root for. Now, look, I haven't really cared about hockey as much since ESPN didn't have the rights. It just wasn't in my purview as much. But now we're getting it back. It's in my consciousness. I am all in, Raj, on the Montreal Canadiens, a bunch of 21-year-old kids who were underdogs in every round.
Patrick Waugh? Is Patrick still
playing? No, man, he hasn't played in like 15, 20 years. Man, what are you talking about? No, man. Cole Caulfield, okay? All right, these guys are getting started. You're looking at a dynasty coming up. All right, thanks to Raj. Thanks to Ramona, Kendrick Perkins, Bubba, and the folks in studio. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See you.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.